Our texts this day seem to be more prescient than usual. On the one hand, we have an Old Testament text from Isaiah that speaks of a new creation, that speaks of a new hope that renders the former authority obsolete and celebrates a change in the order of things that have been. On the other hand, we have a New Testament text from Luke that speaks of a cataclysmic destruction, apocalyptic witness to the trial that lies ahead, rife with persecution, natural calamity, famine, and even death, and a call somehow to endure it all. One might say that the lectionary, rather incredibly divine of the historic occasion of this particular election and the disparate reactions of a deeply divided people. For on the one hand, as Cindy said, in these very pews, we have people here with us who are celebrating, along with that first portion in Isaiah, that we are on the precipice of something previously unimaginable and yet fantastically new in Mr. Trump and his leadership. And on the other hand, also in these very pews, we have a great many who are grieving, freaked out by a vision of America so strangely and sadly on the same latitude as the world's demise as foreseen in the gospel. What then are we to make of these things? How then are we to reconcile these wide and seemingly unagreeable differences in our texts and in each other? And can it be possible, even as God's collective and elected people, to come together and unite when we are apparently so at odds with each other's political, cultural, and environmental concerns? Last Sunday, Cindy proclaimed, "One thing is certain, that come Tuesday, either the person you greatly fear will bring us all to ruin, or the person you vaguely hope will keep us from the abyss will have been elected. And another thing is certain, come next Sunday, come today. The work we have to do as Christ's church in a divided, distrustful, fearful nation will be all the more critical. It is the work, it is the witness of a people who trust that in life and in death, all we have and all we are belongs to God. Therefore, we will not fear." Inspirational words. And yet, even as they bear our repeating, we will not fear. We will not fear. We will not fear. Today and tomorrow and for some time to come, there will be many here and afar who just can't help but be afraid for themselves and this nation, for their families and their neighborhoods, for their friends and even for their strangers, and all with some reason. Generally and psychologically speaking, when meeting with people who are in the midst of experiencing fear, the best course of action is typically not to tell them, to simply stop worrying. In my experience, that pretty much never works. I try it with Anya, we're about to take off on a plane. It never works. Seriously, I don't think that I, white man, have any right or platform to tell someone else, especially someone who has been marginalized, how to feel. And yet, telling people how to feel, to not overreact, to stop whining and crying so much, that there is nothing to be afraid of, that everything will be okay, has seemingly been the tactic of choice, as I've seen it on Facebook, as I've heard it on the news, and even some to laugh and we began to chat. And then a new patron came in and sat down next to us and proceeded to tell us all about how that particular date was actually the anniversary of a young woman's death who met her demise at the hands of a drunk driver as soon as she pulled out of the very parking lot space in which we had just pulled into. We just wanted a beer and a burger. Our stunned silence and our mutual unnerving is precisely how I imagine Christ's disciples to be. Brutal. But Jesus' point, and perhaps even the patrons, shouldn't be lost. The unexpected, the unfathomable, can and will happen. And we simply have to be ready for it. And if possible, we simply have to endure it. If we ever want to see a new day, if we ever want to see a new creation, or even perhaps the formation of a new or reclaimed political party. Ken White, in his blog entry, Getting Back to Work the Day After, he wrote this: "When I look at my grandparents and the dangers and uncertainties they faced alongside their generation, I am filled with confidence in our endurance. I feel the same when I look at America as it came through the hellish abattoir of the Civil War. I feel it when I see how African Americans fought through lynchings and murders and fire hoses and dog attacks and beatings along march routes and explicitly racist laws to secure some measure of legal equality and ultimately an African American president. I feel it when I see that Americans who believe that the state had no right to regulate whom we love fought from Bowers v. Hardwick to Lawrence v. Texas in less than a generation. America has fought wars of every stripe against ourselves and nativists. And so we shall again survive these things. The task isn't easy. It's daunting. But we're up to it. In Symmetry, on Wednesday, the Presbytery of Philadelphia's office offered this message: "People of hope, in the midst of all that seeks to divide us as a people, we have a serious and urgent work before us. We may not be sure of what this work looks like, but one thing is certain. The same God who rose Christ from the dead will raise us up in this brief moment of time. We need to make it count, and we need to find a way to do it together." Together. But how? It begins, I think, with these words from Pastor Amelia Beasley: "It is important to allow people space to express their feelings without fear or judgment of retaliation. Too often, we refuse to engage with others in honest dialogue because we don't want to deal with conflict, or we are afraid that the truth will create a permanent chasm between us. Too often, conversations are shut down quickly, or never begin at all because we assume the worst about those with whom we disagree. When we define the intentions and attitudes of others based upon our own assumptions, rather than seeing one another as people made in God's image, we are not loving neighbors as God intended us to love them. No one can be fully understood," and I need to remember this, "no one can be fully understood by their social media presence or by a short conversation in the grocery store alone. Only authentic relationships will bring forth changed individuals and communities. And being authentic with each other doesn't merely imply tolerating each other, Michael Stevenson, CEO of AT&T, just remarked that tolerance is for cowards. Being tolerant requires nothing from you but to be quiet, to not make any waves, holding tightly to your views and judgments without being challenged. Do not tolerate each other, but work hard. Move into uncomfortable territory and understand each other. And having said that, the remains of this cautionary note in the annals of our world's history. Neville Chamberlain. You remember him? He once stated that we shall seek by all means in our power to avoid war by analyzing possible causes, by trying to remove them, by discussion in the spirit of collaboration and goodwill. I think we might all recall, even if you've just read about it, how that worked out. Collaboration, goodwill, mutual understanding, authenticity, these are all important and inherently good things, yes. But we also can't lose sight of our ethical identity at the cost of coming together, at the cost of shaking hands and smiling for the cameras. For we must always stand first and fast by what is right. Defending that which emanates from the light, and not that which arises from the dark. In the 16th century, a school of Kabbalah was formed after the teachings of Rabbi Isaac Luria. One of his most profound teachings was his understanding of the creation of the world, and he named this in an account, the shattering of the vessels. It is particularly appropriate for this sermon in this time, where we were first talking about Isaiah's new creation. It goes somewhat like this, and I beg that you all listen. He believed that at the beginning of time, of all time, God's presence filled the universe, and it was dark. And then, in a moment very much like the Big Bang, God's totality contracted, held there for a second, and then exploded outward in an enormous cosmological explosion. And from this blast, 10 holy vessels came forth, each filled with primordial light. God sent forth these 10 vessels like a fleet of ships, each carrying its cargo of divinity. Had they all arrived intact, the universe and our world would have been perfect. But the vessels were too fragile to contain such a powerful divine light. And though and so they broke open, split asunder, and all the holy sparks were scattered like seed, like sand, like the stars. The sparks fell everywhere, many downward to earth, and most became hidden from view. Ultimately, he says, this is why humanity was then created after, to search for and gather up these sparks of light. And when enough holy sparks have been gathered, the broken vessels will be restored, and tikkun olam, the fixing of the world, the repair of the world, to as it was first intended, will finally be complete. Therefore, it should be the aim of everyone to raise these sparks of light from wherever they are imprisoned, and to elevate them to holiness by the power of all of our souls. My friends, it is only in authentically coming together today on Stewardship Sunday as joint heirs and stewards of this often beautiful earth and of this God's church that we can press forward as Christ's peacemakers, as lights sent out into a world so shrouded in darkness, so that understand, care for, and minister to all people, thereby ushering forth God's originally intended creation. And though I realize that for some it might feel like God is still stuck, will stand up for this church. For the beacon of light, it is. For the blinding radiance, it can be. I will increase my pledge, and I will pledge more of my time and more of my energy to fight the fight of those who need us most. For I believe it is in this place that our voice, if nowhere else, can be heard. And it is through this place and by God's will and God's power that we will, in fact, be heard if we want to be heard. For, and these next words are not my own, but they are the words of Lily Ferris, daughter of Betsy Badger. She said, "For now that I see who we are and how much work there is to do, and there is so much, I have never felt more driven and fired up to be a part of our change. For those of us who are now just seeing clearly, we cannot take this moment for granted. Let us not sit down and let things pass like we've done so many times before. But let us stand up and speak loudly, all the while showing those standing next to us, our fellow Americans, who feel so hated and ignored, that they are important and they are so loved. Let us come together and begin to right the wrongs. Let us care for one another, not just today, but every day. And show each other that we are supporters and fighters for not only our own rights,